Today, the website change.org launches a new offshoot aimed at affecting elections, changepolitics.org. If you're not familiar with change.org, it's the site used by 130 million people around the world to change things they don't like through online petitions. For our View from the Top conversation this week, we're joined by Ben Rattray, founder and CEO of change.org. Ben, welcome. And here we are 9 years since you started this site. What are some of the biggest things that you would take credit for as a site?
What we've seen that's interesting is not any one given campaign, but there are 20,000 campaigns launched on change.org every single month, from things like stopping acid attacks in India to saving local parks in your neighborhood. So rather than being any one given campaign, we see this sort of massive propagation of a huge diversity of campaigns, local and global in scope.
But was there one thing that you were like, wow, I can't believe we just did that?
I mean, the campaign that took off first, that was sort of demonstrated the power, we thought, of everyday people to make a difference in extraordinary ways online, was a real tragic case in South Africa around this issue called corrective rape, where a woman literally was raped because the man was trying to turn her straight. And a friend of hers started a change.org campaign in defense of her. It goes viral across South Africa, becomes the biggest news story that week, and ends up mobilizing many people outside of parliament in South Africa and getting the government to apologize after years of ignoring the issue entirely and passing a national task force to investigate and to stop the incidents of corrective rape. And that was the beginning of the campaigns on the site.
And why? Why do you think something like that works, that you just get so many people to sign an online petition and all of a sudden the thing that they've all wanted but I guess haven't said to the right people that they want happens?
The most important thing we found are the stories, the personal stories that undergird a lot of these campaigns. You know, people access issues not through abstract numbers, not through policy papers, but through the stories of the people that are most impacted by those issues. And in this case, I mean, nobody had woken up that morning and really cared about that policy per se, but it was the story of this remarkable woman, Ndume Funda, who had started this campaign. Her photo and her narrative was what drove that campaign. It was very similar to the campaign around Trayvon Martin that was launched by his parents just about a week after his tragic death, before there was any media exposure. And it was because the story of his parents and his own personal story that that campaign took off and broke through in a way that previous injustices in the criminal justice system hadn't.
Have you had to take any campaigns down because they were inappropriate? People were trying to get something to happen that you didn't think made good sense or wasn't right?
It's really rare that we see this. I mean, just like YouTube or Twitter, we have a huge array of campaigns or content on the site. And every so often, there are people that will sort of instigate bullying or if there's any hate speech on the site. But it is such a vast minority of the campaigns. And we think it's because the campaigns that take off most are the ones that inspire people, the ones that go viral on social media. And those tend to be the things that bring people together, not divide them. And that's the overwhelming percentage of campaigns on the site.
What is in it for you, for change.org? Because we should say you're a for-profit even though you're a .org.
Yeah, we're a B Corporation, a social benefit corporation. And our perspective is that business can be an immense vehicle for social good in the world. In fact, it's been this artificial divide between nonprofits only doing good and for-profits only doing bad that we think is harmful actually for everyone.
But how do you make money?
We generate revenue by letting cause-based organizations, a lot of the biggest nonprofits and political campaigns around the world, to promote their campaigns on the site to build their membership over time. So it's basically it's an advertising product for cause-based organizations. And because the 130 million users we have, we generate enough revenue to almost cover costs, although we also have investors.
But is it possible to really know who the users are? I was looking on the site earlier and I could probably get away with making up a fake name and a fake email address and signing a petition even if I really didn't believe in it.
Yeah, what we see is we can track based on all the data we have if people try to sign a petition, for example, more than once, if they don't confirm their email address. We can also track if disproportionately in certain places people aren't connecting to Facebook or to Twitter as indications they may not be real identities. So overwhelmingly, we can actually match the data of users that we have to third-party data sets to confirm are these voters, are these people that are active donors, and see the overwhelming majority are. And so we have third-party validation, even though we don't use that data for any purposes otherwise.
We're speaking with Ben Rattray, the founder and CEO of Change.org. You were hacked by Chinese hackers in 2011. What did you learn from that experience? Because this is something that now everybody's worried about. Companies, organizations, the government are being worried about being hacked by these Chinese hackers. Is there anything that can be done to protect yourself against something like that?
You actually can, and we didn't know at the time. The context was there was the Guggenheim Museum started a Change.org campaign in defense of the well-known artist Ai Weiwei. And after that went viral, there was an immediate denial of service attack from China. And we didn't have any defenses at the time, and so we're taken down. But now we use an array of specialized software services that can protect sites from those types of attacks, and we haven't gone down since.
You think that those would actually be able to protect you, or do you think that there just hasn't been a hack since then?
Oh, there definitely have been attempts at hacks. I mean, whenever you provide tools that empower people to really challenge power at the highest levels of government, especially in non-democracies, you're going to get a reaction. And we do get reactions on a regular basis. It's that these new specialized services, Cloudflare is one of them, tend to be incredibly good and sophisticated at identifying preemptively these attacks and being able to redirect false traffic from them to support and sustain sites like ours.
I want you to just take us back to when this site started and the reason that this site started, that you wanted to start this site, which has to do with your own family.
Yeah. You know, my personal path was that I was originally going to be an investment banker. I was passionate about finance, and I thought that was the demonstration of success, one's ability to make lots of money. And I was a senior at Stanford and went back home my winter quarter, and one of my younger brothers unexpectedly came out as gay. And then he said the thing that was this most influential in my life, which is the thing that was most hurtful for him, wasn't watching, you know, people that were anti-gay attack him, but the good people that stood by and did nothing, people like me, and called me out as his own brother, someone he deeply loved and how I love him. And it was probably the most shame I'd ever had in my entire life, and it made me reflect deeply about who I was, what I wanted to do, and eventually after a number of weeks realized that what I wanted to do was to empower other people to stand up and to speak out on issues they cared about, and I went on a very new path.
So what would you think if somebody were to today put a petition up on change.org to add a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution banning same-sex marriage, for example?
You know, one of the things we've found is the most powerful way to enable people to mobilize for long-term change is to provide tools to those who are marginalized, who have not had voice in civic space, and then step back and allow them, empower them to have that voice. And though there are campaigns on the site that I personally may disagree with or that a lot of people in the organization may not support, that the best path towards citizen empowerment is not to try to press our thumb on the scales, but rather let people have power themselves. And if you look at the huge progress I think we've had in America over the past 50 to 100 years in rights, the story is really a larger and larger group of minorities being empowered to have voice in civic space. And that's what we're all about, not deciding who wins, but rather empowering everyone.
So you'd be okay with such a petition?
We wouldn't remove petitions unless they have specific hate speech or they're bullying or potentially violent. Otherwise, we actually feel deeply about our role as a platform, similar to YouTube being a platform for video or Twitter being a platform for free speech.
What do you say to people who look at the kind of things that Change.org does and they say, this is slacktivism, this is clicktivism. These are people who don't have the real will to go out and protest in the streets the way that we did back in the day, and it's so easy for them to do this.
You know, I think that a couple years ago, you might have been able to still believe that these online tools didn't really matter. They didn't make a difference. They weren't impacting the real world. But the reality is, you know, more than a dozen times a day, there's a change.org campaign that changes literally a policy of a government or practice of a business. And in fact, we see sometimes people that have historically tried to organize offline, been ineffective, and used online tools to mobilize a much larger group of people. There's a young woman named Lakshmi who was subject to an acid attack in India, and she was 15 years old and denied a marriage proposal and had acid thrown in her face because of it. And she tried to organize for years offline, got totally ignored by the government, and after starting a Change.org petition, literally in 3 days, 30,000 signatures, it ends up being delivered in person to the same government office she had been ignored from so long and ends up changing the policy in 2 days and gets a new law passed. And so we see the combination of online mobilization and offline change being the most potent force. It's not just one or the other.
So here we are coming up to the 2016 presidential campaign. I know you are launching a new site today to get change.org more interactive with politics.
Yeah, we're launching changepolitics.org, which is an extension of the platform we've built. And the reason is, you know, we want to shift the influence that exists in politics from traditional parties and donors to citizens. And we think we can do that in two ways. One is empowering people to directly ask questions of the candidates and vote in the questions they want most responded to. And the second is enabling voters to share information about the candidates they want to vote for, not just for president, but for city council and school board, to enable them to easily make informed choices in the ballot box.
That's Ben Rattray, the founder and CEO of Change.org, and now it sounds like ChangePolitics.org as of today. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.